This is Mornings with Kale in Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
Well, more changes in Weld RE4. This as the Weld RE4 School District Board of Education President Jennifer Lieber resigns, citing a change of focus away from education as the reason. 7:08 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1, 1310, KFKA, Mornings with Gail, as we kick off our local news roundup. Working for a piece out of the Greeley Trib by Ann Delaney, who writes, on a night, the Board of Education for Windsor and Severance Schools named an acting superintendent and set in motion the process for finding a full-time replacement for Dan Siegmiller. Board President Jennifer Lieber announced her resignation effective today after 6 years. She explained that it's more of the change of focus away from education as being the primary reason for her departure following last night's meeting at Windsor High School, adding, I'm an educator and I don't want to be a politician. School boards before were nonpartisan and now they're political, and she says that doesn't appeal to her. Now, her resignation comes less than a week after Siegmiller announced his departure later this month following the district's failure to pass that $179 million bond measure in the November 2nd election. Lieber said that with the rejection of the bond, it was time for, quote, a shift in leadership, close quote. District Director of Instruction Amy Heinsma was named the acting superintendent beginning November 24th through January 3rd. Siegmiller's last day is November 23rd. Now, Heinsma had been the director of instruction since 2010. In the role, she is responsible for preschool through 12th grade coordination of all instructional programs in the district, including development and revision of standards, curriculum development, assessment and reporting, student achievement, and alignment of instructional practice to district and state assessments in accordance with the school board's objectives and policies. This according to the RE4 website. Chief Operating Officer Jason Sabert said the district hopes to have an interim superintendent in place on January 3rd. The interim superintendent will lead the district through the end of the fiscal year on June 30th. Now, apparently, the job for the interim superintendent will be posted today. It will be open for 2 weeks. The board will select finalists in early December. Public interviews will be held the week of December 6th, and the district ideally would like to have an interim in place in mid-December. Now, the board also decided last night to go with a search firm to help the district in its search for a full-time superintendent. The goal is to have a permanent replacement named in April and to start work on July 1st. The district will aim to select a search firm next month. Now, the board will likely accept Lieber's resignation at its next meeting and declare a vacancy. The board will then have 60 days to fill Lieber's seat by appointment. The date of the next board meeting is unknown pending the certification by Weld County of the votes in the Board of Education race between Aaron Smith and incumbent Christopher Perkins. Now, apparently neither Perkins nor Board Treasurer Russ Smart attended the meeting. Smart is ill, and sadly, Perkins is in the hospital, this according to Lieber. Now, Lieber's resignation ends that recall effort launched against her in September by a group of school district residents who are unhappy with the board and the overall direction of the district. Board member Reagan Price is also a subject of a recall by that same group. Weld County Clerk and Recorder Carly Coppas said last week the petitions for the recalls had been submitted to the county for review after 2 months of collecting signatures. Price declined any comment on whether she might resign, then ending the recall bid against her. She said she's, quote, devastated, close quote, to see Lieber leave the board. Price called Lieber a, quote, asset to the board, close quote, adding, I think the district is losing a great leader, and it's going to be hard to replace her. Lieber was first elected in 2015 and was unopposed for re-election in 2019. She said she initially considered resigning at the end of the academic year in May or June. Lieber said she changed her mind and decided to leave sooner with the district's upcoming search for a new superintendent, saying that she wants whoever takes her seat to have a say in hiring the superintendent. Now, the nearly two-hour meeting last evening began with a public comment period, and 19 people addressed the board. One of the themes to come from the public remarks centered on the division in the school district community that's pretty much been festering and brewing for many, many months. Former Weld RE4 board member Dennis Bruins, who was on the board when Sig Miller was hired as a principal in the district nearly 17 years ago, mentioned the lack of decorum and civility, those are his words, in the district community. Rude and vulgar signs, he said, and dissemination of misinformation. The mean-spirited Facebook posts are shameful. Adult behavior is often modeled by children. No wonder there is disruptive behavior. And yeah, I will concede the point that school board meetings far and wide have grown increasingly contentious. And again, never would use a disparity or a disagreement or a variance in opinion, strongly held opinions, would never use that to condone any violence in any way, shape, or form. But I think it could be argued that what we have seen over the past 18 or 19 months is parents becoming more involved in the educational process, which indeed they should be. They have every right to be involved in how and what their children are educated and learning. But it needs to be done in a way, and I understand that passions are raging. And so maybe a voice gets raised here and there. Does that make a parent who has concerns about their child's education a domestic terrorist? No, of course not. But I think perhaps, and check me on this if I'm wrong, we might move more readily toward our overall goals, particularly when it comes to education, if we just lower the temperature just a bit. Your thoughts this morning, 970-353-1310. Drop me a text on our 1310 KFKA text line, 888-530-0043. Now, Windsor Middle School learning coach, back to the piece, Warren was among the speakers to address the impact of the community environment on educators and students. Warren has been at Windsor Middle School for 16 years and said this year has been harder than I ever thought teaching could be. She mentioned the challenges communicating with quarantined students, students walking out of classes, cleaning desks, reminding students to wear masks, in her words, 1,000 times a day. We can't take much more, she said. We need support. We need parents to support us. But it seems as though support needs to work both ways, and that all opinions and ideas and concerns about education need to be given the same weight and taken under consideration. But Warren went on to say the turmoil in the community is affecting us, and it's affecting our kids, and we see it each and every day. Could this indeed be a teachable moment for everyone who is engaged in the process. This is Wild RE4. School District Board of Education President Jennifer Lieber announced her resignation at a meeting that took place last night. 718 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1, 1310, KFKA.
Prep sports and the UNC Bears are on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. The latest on the Broncos, the Nuggets, and the Rockies. Listen to the Hull Show weekdays at noon on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Well, it's ready. Teddy Bridgewater seemingly took a pass on a tackle on Darius Slay, who did slay, by the way. His 83-yard fumble return for a touchdown pretty much put a fork in it as the Broncos went down to the Philadelphia Eagles 30-13 on Sunday. Riddle me this. Does the fact that Teddy Bridgewater took full accountability and responsibility for his lack of action and the requisite apology as well, does that make up for it? You tell me, Broncos country. 970-353-1310. Drop me a text, 888-530-0041. Closing in on 727 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1, 1310, KFKA, Mornings with Gail. Now, you had, this is according to a piece by Mike Kliss, pulled this out of the Denver Post, in which Bridgewater was called out in a team meeting for his rather lackluster, let's call it what it was, a lack of effort on Slay's touchdown return. Bridgewater saying, "I failed and I own up to it. It's unacceptable." Kudos to him for, as Mike Kliss writes, bravely confessing to a job poorly done. Now, he said, Bridgewater did, in a Zoom press conference on Monday, that they watched the film as a team, and the coach pointed it out that, hey, his effort had to be better there, and said, "Bridgewater, I totally agree. That's not the type of tape I want to put out there. It's one of those situations where you get a little ticked off after watching because it's like you know how much the game means to you. Guys out there trying to make a play. It feels like you've got a little help running toward the sideline, try to force the cutback. But in real time, it feels like everything is happening fast. I should force the cutback. But when you slow it down, it's like, man, just give more effort." And you watch it, he said, and you walk away ticked off at yourself at your effort. Credit Slay, Bridgewater went on to say. He made a great play also, but it's one of those deals where we've got guys diving, trying to make a tackle, and I just needed to lay it all out for the guys in that moment, but he pretty much just waved Slay goodbye now, didn't he? Now, ordinarily, Bridgewater would not have met the press during a bye week, which the Broncos are now on after that humiliating home loss to the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday. But the public reaction to Bridgewater's rather lackadaisical effort in trying to stop, if he did at all, the Eagles' Darius Slay Jr. during that 83-yard game-changing fumble return for a touchdown was so visceral that the Broncos and the quarterback felt the need to address it as soon as possible. Now, Bridgewater also said initially, "I thought that Melvin Gordon III was down already." Okay, let's get into the setup, all right? You had running back. This as Broncos coach Vic Fangio decided to go for it on 4th and 1/2 from the Eagles 23-yard line. Running back Melvin Gordon III appeared to have picked up the first down as the Eagles and former University of Colorado linebacker Davion Taylor punched the ball out of his arm. And from that, gotta love this turn of phrase, scrum of humanity came the cornerback, Slay, with the ball. He dropped it, picked it up, went backwards, reverse field, finally sped upfield the other way. And Bridgewater was just kind of waiting back near midfield. And if you watch the tape, you'll see Bridgewater just kind of barely nodding his head towards Slay as he ran near him. And, well, he was off to the races. Bridgewater said, initially, I thought Melvin was down already, and then there wasn't a whistle, so it kind of caught me by surprise. But at the same time, I'm right there. Opportunity to dive, sacrifice, do whatever I can to help the team in that moment. And to his credit, and kudos to you, and Rudy agrees, to Bridgewater, and I failed, and I own up to it. It's unacceptable. As a football player, as a member of this team, you play this game, and you lay it on the line each and every weekend. Now, you also had Harris coming out and saying, defensive lineman Shelby Harris coming out and saying, well, you just can't point to one individual. I'm with my quarterback, he said, and I'm going to ride with him, ride or die. Harris is, but Fangio coming out and saying as well, he would have liked to have seen Bridgewater try to make a play, but he wasn't about to bench him and consider starting quarterback Drew Locke after the bye. No, Fangio said, Teddy is our quarterback. Question for you, Broncos country. Is Ready Teddy not so ready during that game? Still your quarterback? You tell me. 970-353-1310. 731 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 1031-1310, KFKA.
For the latest on the Broncos, the Nuggets, and the Rockies, listen to The Hull Show, weekdays at noon on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Some healthy retail sales numbers coming in for October at 735. Keith Weinman, Presidential Wealth in Loveland Inn.
U.S. retail sales up 1.7% in October. Economists were forecasting 1.3 to 1.5%. Takeout cars, and they were still up 1.7%. Auto sales were up actually 1.8%. Gasoline prices, as we all know, up almost 4% at 3.9%. This is month to month. Clothing was down. Restaurants were flat. After a mixed to lower close yesterday, all three major market averages were higher in pre-market trading this morning on news that both Walmart and Home Depot beat estimates on third quarter earnings, and both reported sales jumps of over 9%. Both stocks up on that news. Markets have gone back and forth this morning. The Dow Industrial Average is up 130 right now at 36,212. The S&P is up 11, now 12, at 4,695. And the NASDAQ is up 29 at 15,882. Oh, by the way, Goldman Sachs predicting the S&P at 5,100 by the end of next year. Again, the S&P at 4,695 this morning. After hitting new record highs, analysts are generally unable to explain why cryptocurrencies are pulling back sharply this morning. Bitcoin down 5.5%, 60,749. And this, be ready for an announcement from the White House on who will head the Federal Reserve for the next 4 years. Jerome Powell or Lyle Brainard? A Brainard choice could signal continued pro-growth policies from the Fed, more so than a nomination of Jerome Powell. And again, that announcement could come at any time. Am I talking today? Could be. We don't know, but it could come at any time.
One a Republican, one a Democrat. Gee, in today's overheated political climate, will that have anything to do with it?
Most likely, yeah. Wouldn't most presidents want to pick their own people to head the Fed? It's a four-year term. And once again, you know, compliments to Jay Powell and the way things have been handled. But does it just go to politics, as you said?
It seems like everything does these days.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So if you are thinking about those retirement years, okay, maybe not at 7:38 on your Tuesday morning, but I'm sure it crosses your mind from time to time, no matter where you are on your career path. Well, there is one thing you need to remember, and that is the sooner you start the planning process, the better those retirement years will be for you. And as a bonus, the more things you'll tick off on that bucket list. And it all starts with a phone call to Keith Weinman of Presidential Wealth in Loveland, followed up by your questions, because Keith loves him some questions.
I do. Let's tackle your questions. Questions you're not able to you haven't been able to get clear answers to. Why not? You got nothing to lose, won't cost you, and won't try and sell you anything. Just love your questions. And we do get a lot from Mornings with Kale listeners. 970-776-7500.
Keith Weinman, Presidential Wealth, Loveland. Thanks so much.
All right.
7:39 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 1310 KFKA.
Everything you need to know about Northern Colorado is on NOCO Now. Weekdays at 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Join Clark Johnson and Bruce Dick for Clark and the Coach. Weekdays at 11 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
House Democrats signaling that, all systems go, at least appearing that way, or perhaps that is just the strategy relative to selling this roughly, okay, you're going to see it billed as a $2 trillion tax and spending bill. Mm-mm. Don't believe it for one New York minute. It's more of a $4 trillion tax and spending bill. But yes, you got House Democrats saying we're making progress. This despite lingering uncertainty over the cost. Oh, wait, no, that's right. Build Back Better won't cost us a dime. GOP attacks over its potential inflationary impact. And you got to love it, because you just had Jen Psaki coming out and saying, no. This won't contribute to inflation whatsoever, and a pretty widespread expectation that the Senate won't act until December at the very earliest. But all eyes are on the Congressional Budget Office. That'll be a key milepost this week, as the Congressional Budget Office is expected to release its analysis of what the true costs of this bill indeed will be. But that's not expected to come our way until at least Friday. But hey, America, as the Wall Street Journal editorial board points out, will be number one. Who doesn't want to be number one? Well, I think it's a pretty dubious distinction that America will be number one in taxes. Sure, we like to be first, but maybe not in this category. Because do you realize, despite all the claims to the contrary, if this $4 trillion House spending bill actually passes, the United States will have the highest combined federal and state personal income tax in the entire developed world. Don't take my word for it. The Tax Foundation recently compared the combined tax rates on individual income at all levels of government across major nations. Today, U.S. is pretty much in the middle of the pack, but with still a very high top rate on income of 42.9%, including federal and average state taxes. That's a little bit above the current Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development average of 42.6%, but not for long. Under the Democrat plan, the combined U.S. top rate would climb to 57.4% by 2026. that would enable the United States to leapfrog over 22 other countries in the OECD tax ranking, including Italy, Sweden, and even France. Germany, by the way, comes in at a relative bargain at 47.2%. Congratulations, America. We'll be number one. Now, the increase would come from the income tax surcharge. The bill slaps on the gross income of those dreaded evil high earners. 5% rate on earnings above $10 million, another 3% on income above $25 million, and that's on top of the current 37% top federal tax rate. I know, like you, my head's spinning. But unlike the ordinary income tax, the surcharge rates would also apply to non-wage earnings, like capital gains. What about those unrealized capital gains? They ever sort that out? Punishing savers who earn a big one-time windfall. Now, the bill would also expand an existing tax to target more income. Democrats imposed a 3.8% surtax on certain earnings a decade ago as part of Obamacare, and now President Biden would expand that rate to all taxable business income above $500,000. This is a surtax on small businesses that have been hit so hard over the past 18, 19 months. But it's as a result of many entrepreneurs and sole proprietors paying taxes through the personal income tax code. But wait, it won't stop there. The current 37% top rate on ordinary income, well, that'll rise to 39.6% in 2026 as those individual provisions and the 2017 tax reform are scheduled to expire. Add up these changes plus the 6% average top state tax, and you arrive at that rather eye-popping 57.4% rate. Now, this, by the way, is the compromise that Democrats settled on after Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema opposed an increase in the current rates for individual and corporate income. The surcharges will spare many rich earners who make less than $5 million from a tax rate increase. Oh, but they will pay in other ways. That doesn't mean these surcharges are benign and won't affect everything else. And I think this is perhaps key to the entire equation here. There is a trickle-down effect that will hit the middle class. The high tax rates will distort work and investment decisions for high earners, and they'll seek out ways to shelter their income from high marginal rates. The surcharges will also increase the incentive for the highest earners to relocate from, for example, high tax New York and California to states with no income tax, such as Texas, Nevada, or Florida. Didn't I hear that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is house shopping in Florida? We've been here before, though. A previous bout of envy politics in the middle of the last century pushed the top income tax rates above 90%. But over time, that crazy high rate yielded less and less revenue as rich taxpayers, aided by Congress, found ways to dodge them. Well, and that's one reason John F. Kennedy proposed, and yes, Congress passed, a cut in the top tax rate to 70% from 91% on income over $100,000. Okay, let's go ahead and adjust about $848,000 in 2021 dollars for individual tax filers. Those Kennedy tax cuts triggered the 1960s economic boom. Ronald Reagan continued the march down in 1981, cutting the top rate to 50%, and again with the tax reform of 1986 that cut the top rate to 28%. Those cuts triggered another decade of rapid economic growth with tax revenue flooding into the treasury. Well, As the Wall Street Journal editorial board opines, we realize it's rather impolite to mention this tax history these days, since we apparently live in an era where the wealthy are supposed to be punished for their own sake, for simply achieving the American dream, which means we might just have to learn these lessons in economic reality again the hard way from very painful experience. Closing in on 7:57 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1, 1310, KFKA.
Join Clark Johnson and Bruce Dick for Clark and the Coach. Weekdays at 11 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Northern Colorado's Voice and your home for the Denver Broncos is 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
What are you doing to make things better? 7:59 now. Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1, 1310, KFKA. Mornings with Gail. Looking forward to our conversation this morning with State Senator Barbara Kirkmeyer, who just yesterday tossed her hat into the ring for Colorado's 8th Congressional District seat. One of several Republicans to do so. But Senator Kirkmeyer planning to unveil a Renew America plan in the coming months that will be the cornerstone of her bid. She weighs in at 8:05. 1310 KFKA Greeley. It's 8 o'clock.